Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 17 of Launch and Learn. In this podcast, we talk to entrepreneurs about their experiences in starting and launching startups. This podcast is hosted by Matthias Dickerhoff and Alexander Thompson. Today, we have Benjamin Baranion as a guest, who is the CEO of Pentec, a digital factoring startup offering quick funding to companies. Benjamin shares his experiences on many topics, such as launching a fintech startup in Hungary, getting funding, and regional expansion.
Yeah, thanks so much, Benjamin, for coming on the show. Really looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So yeah, as usual, we'll get started with what you had for lunch today.
What I had for lunch today? Fajitas, actually. Fajitas.
Ooh, did you make it yourself?
With my wife. So yeah.
Okay. Mostly working from home these days, I guess.
Yeah, but we are still in a kind of hybrid model. So okay. Whoever wants to go to the office can go to the office. So 1 to 2 days, we usually spend still at the office, especially for the sales team. It helps a lot if we can exchange information more informally as well.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely agree. So yeah, we'll get started first on a bit of your background, just to get some context here. How did you get interested in the business world to begin with, and entrepreneurship in the startup environment?
Mm-hmm. So back in high school, I started organizing events with some of my friends. So basically some high school parties and selling tickets to those at various venues. So we had a small business with like every second month we had a smaller event with a couple of hundred attendants. So this was my first experience in the business or entrepreneurial world. Yeah, based on that, I wanted to learn more. I went to business school, CAS Business School in London. Yeah, after that, I was working for a while at Allianz in Munich. I worked at the think tank in Budapest. And then I went and did my master's at Rotterdam. Yeah, well, afterwards, I was working for a while at a fintech startup in Berlin. So that's where I got into the fintech world and thought it was super exciting. A lot of things happening and driving real change. And yeah, after this this year at a fintech startup, I was working as a management consultant, again, for financial institutions. We helped them in their digital transformation, formulating their digital strategy, and basically arriving in the 21st century. So this way, I saw the two faces of digital transformation, one driving yourself from a small startup, and the other one trying to force some change onto some bigger companies. And for me, it was the former path that seemed more viable. And this is also why we founded our company and thought, okay, let's do this ourselves in the Central Eastern European region.
Yeah. And what was that like for you? I mean, you've worked with very large companies like Allianz, also EY, I believe. And a lot of these also like innovation, kind of like techie places. What was that like for you to jump and say, okay, no, I'm starting my own thing, jumping kind of on your own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wanted to, basically do my own thing. Working for a bigger company helps you really a lot, I think, in the very beginning when you are still learning and you get to know the structure, the structured way of working. And this can help you a lot once you're founding your own company. It's, of course, a risk. You have huge opportunity costs since you're leaving a well-paid job and you're basically jumping into a whole new world. But I think at the end of the day, it's all worth it because since I talked about learning at a big company, this is a whole new level of learning. As a management consulting, it was very exciting. I met new topics, new clients, new companies, basically every day there as well. But what I'm learning as the CEO of my own company, it's a whole new level. There are so complex questions. You have to be strategic. You have to be operationally fit. It's, a whole new dimension.
So yeah, let's get into it. Let's get into Pentec. How do you actually pronounce it with the accent?
It's a Pentec in Hungarian.
Pentec.
Yeah, not very suited for the international environment, but
it's like the French word, like when they have the E at the accent.
Yeah, exactly. But now that we are preparing for international expansion, I think we have to rebrand a little bit.
So yeah, tell me how you met your founding team, how you got started with Pentec.
Yeah, we are a founding team of three people. So Janos is our CFO. I went to uni with him at the CAS Business School in London. And Balint is our COO, and yeah, he's a long childhood friend from of mine. So yeah, one of them is specialized in finance, the other one in the legal aspect. So we could really put together our factoring value proposition based on these kind of experiences. And yeah, we involved our yeah back then CTO in the project as well, who built together an MVP for our digital factoring solution, because we started with a vision to help SMEs increase their liquidity very, very easily. So traditionally, to factor your invoices, you have to go into a bank or visit a factoring house. You have to set up a meeting, wait for a personalized offer a long time. Then you have to bring in some documents, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of paperwork, and the whole process is really intransparent and very tiring. And what we envisioned was to put this whole journey into the digital sphere, make it very easily accessible. So basically, with a few clicks, you can finance your outstanding invoices basically from home.
Yeah, I guess we can quickly explain what factoring actually is, because I think it's a bit of a niche financial concept. But like a small business, for example, would get an invoice or send an invoice to a client. But the clients often have payment periods, right? 30, 60, 90 days.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the idea is that they would sell that invoice to you, mm-hmm. and you would pay them up front, and then you would collect, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we pay them immediately, like up to 90%, and the rest, so the 10% minus the costs, we pay once their partner has paid us.
You mentioned that you had known your co-founders, some of them since childhood or like since university. What's that been like starting a company with your friends? I mean, it's... there's a lot of like mixed advice out there on working with your friends. How has that been for you guys?
Yeah, definitely. But we have been working together actually for quite a while. So we had a student association before this. So we knew how we are performing together as a team. We knew what to pay attention to. So yeah, we have been working together for almost 2.5 years now. And there was one period where we had some conflict, but basically due to our governance structures and basically our culture, and since we are friends, we know each other, we could overcome that quite easily. So I think the important thing is to really pay attention to each other, be empathetic, and if things become difficult, you can even involve a third party. So we what helped us a lot was, for instance, a coaching session. We participated there, and we realized many things that we probably otherwise wouldn't have. Yeah, that helped us a lot to overcome that one particular situation where we had this kind of conflict.
Cool. And now take us back to the first launch. I mean, I think it's tough in the fintech environment to launch an MVP or a basic version because of all the regulations and all of the like restrictions that are there. How did you guys go about launching your first version, and what did that look like?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There are benefits and challenges in fintech. So the benefit is that the customers are more tolerant than in other industries. So they are used to bad financial products. That's why they accept a worse customer journey than I don't know, for instance, in e-commerce. So with our MVP, we were still giving our customers a better customer journey than most banks or larger financial large institutions do. So from this side, it was quite nice. But the other side, the regulatory environment you mentioned, caused us some headache. How we solved this was to use the license of an existing factoring company. So we reached an agreement after, long negotiations that we could work together with them in a tied agent model. So this is a kind of unregulated legal entity. So this way we could use basically the infrastructure of this financial institution without almost having to handle any regulatory requirements. So this way, it was quite nice. Of course, in the profit sharing agreement, we had to pay for their infrastructure and for their license usage.
And how did you go about when you said building the MVP and then getting your first client? How was that like? I mean, you went to them, be like, "Hey guys, look at what we made. You know, do you want to join us?"
Almost. No, actually, it was really, really funny. So we launched a website, I think, like 2 weeks before our first client approached us. And yeah, we were twerking our website, uploading content. I just launched the chat window on our website, and we were trying it out. So a colleague of mine was texting me on chat. I was like, yeah, fine, it's working. Then all of a sudden, there was another text message on the chat, and I was like, "Stop it, dude! It's getting annoying. It's not me." And then I checked, and wow, it's a customer. So we started talking to them, and after I don't know a couple of weeks, we signed the first contract like this. So it was really, really funny. They approached us. They found us via Google. So it was really like an organic hit at the very, very beginning. So it was a nice experience.
Actually, I did that as well. You're right. I mean, for transparency reasons, I also did a check with a chatbot with you, I think, or the chat widget. I think back then I did it as well. And I can tell you were not the one on the picture.
No, I think you talked to Bali. Yeah. One of my co-founders. Right.
Knowing what you know now, like about the industry and your customers, would you have built your product differently if you were starting again?
This is a good question. Probably I would postpone the proper development of the risk assessments till a later point and do the MVP in even more kind of an MVP way. Just putting together, I don't know, some Google forms, and this way having the customers submit their inquiries and validating the whole model and the whole customer needs this way, because we could have postponed our fundraising, I think, by maybe even half a year if we did it like this, because this way we could have gotten more validation, more customer inputs, and would have saved some development costs. But it was not a huge issue that we did it this way, but we could have been more efficient, I believe, if we postponed the development and the recruiting of some developers by a couple of months.
Talking about the funding, you already mentioned that briefly now, but at what point in your journey did you take on investments?
Mm-hmm. We were working for almost a year, I believe, in stealth mode. And whilst we were working full time, we put in the evenings and the weekends to work on this project. And then we got to a point where we applied to I think, the biggest and most renowned Hungarian fintech accelerator of MKB Bank. And there, through this acceleration, we received some funding as well. So we basically, once we quit our jobs, we immediately got some funding out of which we could build our product. So this way, it was quite nice. We were already in an acceleration program. We had strong connections to a bank. We could validate our MVP rather quickly in a traditional financial environment. So that helped us a lot. And this way, we had the funding as well and the resources to support our growth.
What are some of the unique challenges of working in Hungary in terms of raising money as well as like talent? What have you seen from just trying to build a company there?
Mm-hmm. The good part is that costs are significantly lower than in Western Europe. So when we are talking about office space, we're talking about developers, it's much, much cheaper. But on the other hand, since we are based in Hungary, our valuation is lower than, for instance, competitors from Western Europe, since we are right now only a single market. The market is smaller, so this makes it a bit more difficult, since the cost base is lower, but our funding or our valuation is lower as well. However, it still helps you a little bit to be in the Central Eastern European environment or to start in a small country, because we could rather quickly validate our concept in Hungary within a bit more than half a year. We have now almost 400 companies registered on our platform. We are growing quite rapidly, and we see that in Hungary it is validated. And now, since we are set almost in Hungary, and we still have to do a lot of work and build our customer base, but we can simultaneously focus on expanding in the region. So right now we are in active negotiations in Slovakia and in Poland as well. And this helps us not to get too focused on one single market, because what many of our competitors do, they build a company suited for I don't know, German or Czech or Polish needs. So we are not doing that. We are already from, after 1.5 years of operating this way, after 1 year of entering the market, we are working on expanding abroad and adapting our infrastructure to local needs.
And what has your growth strategy been like? I mean, I'm sure it would take a lot of manual time if you were going one business at a time to try to convince them to use your service. Have you found any like scalable sales channels, and how did you find those?
Mm-hmm. So I believe the of course, it's not something that I believe. Of course, in terms of growth hacking, you have to find those places where you can harvest a lot of your target customers with minimal effort. So for us, a no-brainer for this was invoicing companies. So in order to be able to factor your invoice, you will have to need an issue an invoice. So we approached the largest invoicing companies in Hungary. Right now, we are integrated with two invoicing companies, one accounting software, and we are in active negotiations with numerous other platforms, through which customers on the one hand have a great customer experience, since they don't have to enter their data manually. So basically they issue the invoice, there is a button they have to click, and they just can send it over to us and finance their invoice immediately. And for us, it's super beneficial because it's structured data, we can automatically handle it, we can evaluate it and immediately help the customer.
You mentioned that it was a no-brainer decision to do this. Could you give a bit more input? How do you evaluate the different opportunities there? Like when you have maybe, a set of three options, how do you then say, okay, this one makes the most sense right now?
Mm-hmm. There are various phases when we do these kind of evaluations, and it's different for the topic and the timing of these kind of issues. Usually we try to put together some kind of matrix system and in that regard assess the benefits and the costs of these kind of initiatives. In this particular matter, it was so significant. I mean, basically as an SME in Hungary, you have to connect your B2B invoices to the central tax authorities. To do so, you have to connect to an online invoicing platform. So basically, it was so obvious that this is the path we have to go, because if you're an SME in Hungary issuing B2B invoices, you have to be integrated into one of these online invoicing providers. So this was so evident that there was really no alternative to it. There were other points that we evaluated, of course, for instance, supply chain finance, approaching larger companies with many suppliers, but they were much more complex than these kind of solutions.
Mm-hmm. And do you have sort of within the team as well an idea of, okay, you know, once we have saturated this opportunity, then now we have the eyes on our next potential or sales and growth channel? Do you guys, what step are you now? You feel like, are you now moving into the next stage where you're then finding new channels for growth?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, with these kind of, so we very strongly believe in these kind of partnership models in the digital sphere and in the offline sphere as well. So right now we put a lot of effort in the digital sphere. We are connected to the smaller invoicing companies, but there are players in Hungary that have jointly 60% of the Hungarian market, which would be like a huge increase. So we are putting a lot of effort there to integrate to their systems. And once we have these kind of online partnerships established, we want to increase our focus in the offline sphere as well, because those who are already active online, we can harvest relatively well, but more traditional kind of customers, not the traditional early adopters, we can reach better via offline channels. And partnerships in this regard could be accountants, tax advisors who are especially in the traditional SME segment, the advisors to the CEO. So they are basically fulfilling some kind of CFO roles. They are helping the CEO make financial decisions, since at SMEs, in most cases, they are not people from business schools, but they are really subject matter experts. They know, I don't know, how to build a house. They know how to sell cat food or things like that. So they are really, really, really focused on that kind of topic.
I want to go back to the topic of fundraising again quickly, because I believe you guys recently raised a round and you've been a part of that process with like finding investors. What has been like the process like for you for in terms of pitching your company? I'm sure you learn a lot about your business model when you try to pitch it to an investor. What was that like for you early on? How did you tweak your pitch to kind of attract the investors?
It helped a lot that I was a management consultant before, because basically as a management consultant, all you do is put together pretty slides and try to convince people that the stuff you put on those slides are real and good. So that helped a lot. And to arrive at the final presentations that we use now and how we convinced our investors, it helped a lot that we had two rounds before our seed round. So we were told, okay, why do you guys do this extra effort of raising an incubation round and a pre-seed round? It helped us a lot. It was a lot of effort. It was quite tiring. So we put in some extra month of work that we probably could have used for building our own company. But through these pitching sessions, through these negotiations in these two rounds, we learned so much about how VCs work, how they try to affect your valuation and what aspects they're going to challenge of your business, that in the seed round, we were prepared for most questions and most kind of techniques they were using in the negotiations that we had.
Going back to the idea, well, you're planning to go to different countries like Poland and so on. You know, since we come from a startup background, people always say, you know, make sure that you really do a good job in your initial market before you move on. Could you tell us a little bit also about, you know, you're expanding and how do you deal with this sort of a regulatory environment, as well as how do you mitigate the risk going into all these countries potentially with a very lean startup and a lean bank account?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we are looking into markets where the regulatory requirements are not high. For instance, in Slovakia and in Poland, you just have to found a company to start factoring activities. In Hungary, you need a factoring license. So in Poland and Slovakia, it's much, much easier to start a company like this. And since you can do that, you can start with an MVP kind of market expansion. It sounds silly, but for instance, we are most likely going to start in Poland with one to two customers to establish our local presence, build up our infrastructure, see how we can do the risk assessment correctly. And in the very beginning, we probably won't even have like a local country manager. So we will keep the operations very lean. We will have a local entity and start very, very small. We can do the same in Slovakia. And once we see, okay, this is working, and we could attract many more customers, we can expand there with much, much more effort. We can introduce a country manager. We can work on the partnerships there. But the first step is to get our foothold, get one to two customers, and see how the local infrastructure works.
Cool.
I don't know if that was the question. If I kidnapped it a little bit.
That's really great. I was thinking also more for you then. I mean, your days must be getting busier and busier. I mean, how do you know, your day to day, how does that work between Hungary and potential the expansion into other countries?
Days are very busy. But since we are growing in numbers as well, right now we are 11 people. For instance, I'm getting less and less involved in the sales activities and marketing activities in Hungary. I used to be involved in a very operational level as well in the past half a year, and in the last 2 months I gave up many responsibilities in these kind of operational terms. So I'm involved in still all those partnership negotiations, of course. I'm still active in the strategic formulation of our marketing plans, of our sales plans, but I'm not actively performing sales tasks. So this helped me free up some time and focus on the next big thing.
And how's that transition been? I mean, I know a lot of founders, like, they start off very operational. Obviously, you have to do everything and do whatever it takes to get your company going. But then all of a sudden, you're put in a management role and you're trusting, you know, what you've built to someone else. And I think some people, you know, they transition better to management than others, or they wish they could still be involved with some of the day-to-day activities. How has that transition been for you from going, like, from an operator to a manager?
I am actually quite happy with delegating, because we are very picky in our recruiting process. So we have multiple. So as a startup, you have a certain culture and you only have limited resources. So for us, it's really, really crucial to get the right person do the right job. So that's why we put, I don't know, then an extra round of interviews or put really a lot of effort into the recruiting process. But at the end of the day, it has to be the right person for the job. And if we see that the person is, for some reason, is not right, and we made a mistake in the recruiting process, then we have to fail early in this regard as well and see it very, very quickly and do something about it. Luckily, so far, this was not the case. So we... our recruiting processes seem to work. So we have great people on the team whom I can fully trust. And for instance, in marketing, our marketing manager took off a lot of work off my shoulders. So these things definitely help me a lot.
And I assume also in Hungary, I mean, how's that in terms of recruitment and the talent pool there? Is it generally a good place for you compared to Germany and the UK where you also have been?
Yes. So, especially developers. So, Western European companies are looking for developers in the Central Eastern European region as well, since they are much cheaper and have a great skill set. So this is, quite convenient for us. And, so this is definitely helping. Maybe an interesting aspect to our recruiting is that we we do more outbound than inbound recruiting. So we don't really believe in job posts. So we used to have some job posts, but it was much more efficient when I directly approached people on LinkedIn. So I already have a vision in mind. Okay, what kind of person could I imagine for this kind of job? I look for that person on LinkedIn, text, I don't know, 10 to 20 people, have interview with 6 of them, and then choose one.
I've never heard of that approach before, because, like, the thinking is, okay, if you're looking for someone highly qualified, what are the odds that they're unemployed at the moment? You know, like, there's probably already have a job where they're doing really well. So if you can actively find them before they are in between jobs, then that's a good way to attract good talent.
Or you can just convince them to leave what they currently have and join you, exactly. Because you just have to offer some alternatives. So people who are already at the same job for, I don't know, 5 to 6 years, those will be definitely be open for some change.
Well, what is your pitch to attract talent? I mean, you give them a big vision. You tell them, oh, you got to get this amount of equity, and in 10 years it'll be worth this amount of money. Or what's the kind of pitch you give them?
It's not really focused on a financial aspect. It's more on this kind of intellectual innovation challenge kind of approach, which is the conversation opener. And the response rate so far has been quite good. So I've had a lot of interviews, and then in the interviews, of course, we talk about the financial side as well. And in many cases, We try to find a reasonable compromise, but of course we cannot offer as much as, I don't know, a huge telco company or other multinationals. But as I said in my pitch and my first message, I'm focusing on the challenge, on the innovation and the intellectual side of things. And yeah, I really believe we can offer people tasks that are much more interesting than at other companies, and basically tasks that I myself, when I was looking for a job, wanted to do when looking for a job.
So yeah, looking forward a bit. What are you most excited that your team's working on right now? What are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
there is so much going on, actually, but there are quite a few things I'm excited about. So one we already talked about, our expansion to Poland, that is already in place. It's super exciting, a new market, and it's a very challenging new topic as well. But things are looking good right now, and I'm really looking forward to see what comes out of this project at the end of the day. And the other big thing that we are working on is a bit of change in our business model. I mentioned that we are working together with this financial institution and we are using their license. Now we are getting our own license in Hungary as well. Mm-hmm. So in these terms, there will be a huge change in the company as well. So these are the two very, very exciting areas affecting the core business.
Looking even further, so let's say 10 years from now, I mean, what is your vision from that? Is it more like you're just looking to, let's say, get acquired, or is your vision really to build an established company in Hungary and Eastern Europe?
10 years from now, I have no idea. it really depends. Like what we want to do, we said it from day one, we are not building a Hungarian company, we are building a company with regional ambitions. So if we can become an active regional player within the next few years and be live in, I don't know, three, four markets and have a significant share of the factoring market in these areas, it would be a huge success. And once we have achieved this, of course, we're going to be attractive to potential banks or Western European competitors. We'll see. But yeah, we are focused on the Central Eastern European region, but once we have established our foothold here, of course, we will start looking at the other larger markets as well that have the potential to enter. Since I believe if we are active in four markets, if we could, if we managed to get customers in four different markets and adapt our software or processes and operations to the local requirements, then we can do that on a much larger scale as well.
Actually, yeah, specifically for that, are you basically launching like subsidiaries in these different markets, or are you using like the same infrastructure and just opening new sales channels? I'm curious to see how you're approaching that.
Legally speaking, we have to open subsidiaries there to be able to operate. Okay. Yeah, basically those are just going to be sales entities. So we can service almost everything from Hungary. So the developers will be seated in Hungary and do the same development.
Similar infrastructure, yeah.
Yeah. So the infrastructure will be the same. We will probably need a local country manager who will be mostly focused on sales and customer acquisition as well.
Gotcha. Any wise words to future entrepreneurs or
entrepreneurs? Please no. Words of wisdom. No.
To the next generation of Hungarians.
Yeah. Old wise man. Now, maybe in 10 years if it turns out.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk to you in 10 years.
All right, cool. Then thank you so much, Benjamin. One last question. How can our users connect with you online?
Yeah, just on LinkedIn, basically. If you add me, drop me a line. Yeah, I'm very happy to connect.
Cool. You'll probably get a lot of requests from Virginia in the US.
Shout out to Virginia.
Love you guys. No. All right. Thanks a lot, Benjamin.
Thanks so much for listening today and for making it to the end of the episode. I hope you learned something. Our theme song is The Vendetta by Stefan Kartenberg. If you want to connect with us or send in your guest recommendations, drop us a line at lunch.learn@gmail.com or connect with Alex or myself on LinkedIn. Otherwise, have a great week, and we'll see you next time on Launch and Learn.